The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report 3 for this week. We're taping this on a Wednesday, and I just did Chris Collinsworth, and now we're going to welcome our old friend Dave Damashek in. We were just having a conversation while we were waiting for the tape to get set up. I was telling Dave how Collinsworth was telling me he gets access to the coach's tape and how I would pay. How much would you pay for the coach's tape?
All right, listen, we'll get to that in a second. Listen, you can act all nice. Oh, our old friend. Listen, I hear what you've been saying all season long to Cousin Sal.
What did
I hear what's said.
What did I say?
Disparagement abounds on the head of Damashek and about the Pittsburgh Steelers and so on. What gives?
I wouldn't say it was disparagement. I say it was just kind of sparagement.
It was mockery. And
slight mockery.
You said, listen, talking about watching last Sunday, and you were talking, I just heard the BS report with you and Sal, talking about the hip fest that was over at the Kimmel crib on Sunday with the Killers and Draper and everybody.
I left out Dax Shepard.
You did leave out Dax Shepard. Yeah, that's right. But you said that Damashek was watching the Steeler game and getting all the attention, and no one deserves it less than he does. What's that? What do you mean by that?
I was just saying, you know, in terms of star power, I don't know if you were in the top 10 in that room, and
well,
suddenly you were the center of attention. I thought,
what was I
weird.
The center of attention for? I was watching a football game.
You were the center of attention.
Well,
it's because people are either taunting you or defending you as the game's going on. You've become a lightning rod for every Steelers game. You know what's funny is I spent probably 90 minutes talking to Don Draper outside while you watched your game and didn't talk to anybody, and now he's on your podcast and not mine. How did that happen?
Draper and I,
I love that we don't call him his real name.
Should we call him Dick Whitman then?
Whitman.
I started talking to him. Last year, he was over a lot at Kimmel's house watching football, and I had no idea who he was. I'd never seen Mad Men.
Right.
And he was just a guy who was sort of quiet with a St. Louis Blues ball cap on. And since, I'm one of the other seven hockey watchers in America, he and I got to talking about that, and he's a big sports fan, a knowledgeable sports fan and everything.
He's a legitimate sports fan, yeah.
Right, and he really, people said, oh, he's the star of Mad Men. Isn't he great? And I didn't put two and two together. He just was a cool guy. And then in the summertime, I watched all of Mad Men, and
right.
Now my heart races, and I swoon every time I'm around.
You know what? When I was hanging out with him on Sunday, you ever see that movie Chuck and Buck?
Oh, yeah.
I basically turned into whoever the creepy guy was. That was me. I was just kind of staring at him with this weird look on my face, trying to get him to go back to my motel room to show him pictures of me and him.
What do I – yeah, so I'm going to talk to him tomorrow on my podcast. What do
well,
I
it'll
need
be,
to
– it'll be the same day. Because we're taping this on Wednesday.
It's all, it gets confusing, yeah. Yes. You'll be able to hear my conversation with Draper/Whitman/Ham.
I'm not helping you with Draper, because I want Draper as well.
Oh, listen.
I'm not giving you any questions for Draper. I hope you screw it up, to be
I just
honest.
Thought I would do you a solid and ask whatever question you might have for
no,
me.
No, I hope you do a bad job and that he emails ESPN.com and says, I need another crack. I need another chance with another podcast host.
All right, so be it.
That one question I really wanted to find out is if he had to learn how to smoke so cool.
Well, that is absolutely, you know. He is, imagine this. This is what really is a question I was thinking about this morning for him. Does he feel that he has any blood on his hands for starting an entire new generation smoking when they otherwise wouldn't, right?
It is true. You know, I left out in the Cousin Sal podcast, so... You know, I had to have a cigarette with Don Draper. I'll come out of retirement to have
sure.
a cigarette for the right people. And we were outside, and the only guy who had cigarettes was Kyle, the PA, who has a beard that makes him look like Merlin Olsen crossed with Jesus, and he's your fantasy basketball partner.
Right, Husky Jesus,
call
him.
Husky
right.
Jesus. So he had a pack of, what are they called, American Spirits?
Mm-hmm.
So we were out there in a circle. It was me, Don Draper, three of the Killers, and Kyle. who had the all-time deer of the headlights look but was trying to seem cool, just kind of like having a cigarette. And so I was telling Jamie about it, and Jamie said this would be a good webisode where Kyle, a star-crossed Kyle, has a cigarette with random celebrities.
That would be good,
a 10-minute web series. I would watch that.
Oh, absolutely,
it'd be like,
yes.
Kind of like the Chris Farley show, but with smoking and like a little more, a hairier version of Chris Farley.
I love it. Make it so.
Yeah. You know, Kimmel's really stepped it up this year from a celebrity standpoint.
Well, listen, first and foremost, though, I think that he's really stepped it up. He could have just rested on his laurels, but he's really kicked it up food-wise.
Right. Yeah, he has.
He's really, he's got that gigantic industrial-sized smoker now outside his house. And by the way, I don't know about you. You must have, your wife must have said the same thing mine did. My clothes.
Oh, my God.
Stunk of the smoker for the entire night, and then the next day she could still smell. We have to wash these immediately. They still smell after I wash them, she complained.
It was one of the all-time worst stenches I've ever had on my clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like almost debating whether to throw them out or not. It was like, you remember back in the days when you could smoke in bars? It was like smelling your clothes the next morning in some smoky bar where it just like you can almost see the nicotine drifting up.
That's the only, I guess that's the difference between you and me though, because, to me it just made me hungry. It smelled delicious,
it
like barbecue. Yeah, it smelled like the smoked beef we ate. The beef brisket, delicious this past week. And, yeah, it's not enough that you go over to his house. Then he serves up a feast each
right.
and every week. Yeah.
Well, he has to deflect the fact that he hasn't followed football in 20 years.
that's a big secret.
Fight club. No, he knows. He knows Troy Aikman's of the Cowboys.
But not seriously, before we move on, I want to talk about the Collinsworth thing. We have a lot that I want to speak to since you've given me the hi-hat throughout the football season.
What are you talking about?
Listen,
the hi-hat.
The hi-hat is what I'm talking about.
What does that mean?
You never saw Miller's Crossing? You give me the hi-hat. I've said to you, listen, you'll come on my podcast, I'll come on yours, and then...
First of all, I didn't have a podcast for like 4 weeks.
Right. Yeah. So that meant you had plenty, even more free time than usual. You could have stopped by Dave's, your old pal Dave's podcast.
We should have talked about
the Patriots and Steelers game either before or after.
That would have been unfriendly.
But speaking of unfriendly is the way that you disparage me. And I mean, the height of hypocrisy out of you that somehow because I root for my football team is makes me a bad fella or something. What about you? What about you and all of your Boston sports fans?
Defend that Welker hit. The fact that you would just still won't admit that Welker was letting up and he got cheap shotted.
I mean, really, when you the Welker hit in particular really makes me wonder if you've just left all rational thought
when
it comes to your
kid. What if he got paralyzed in that play? Does he get suspended then? Does he get fined?
It would have been awful if he would have gotten suspended. But listen, unlike Welker, who got up off the turf and played the following week, and
with a concussion.
That was a macho effort if I've ever seen one. Mm. But look. First of all, two words, Rodney Harrison. And two, if you want to start talking about cheap shots, how dare you talk about anyone else in football when you root for Rodney Harrison.
Well, you rooted for Kimo Von Oha.
Let's not start with that. Now you're a Bengals fan, too?
I'm just saying. It's the Steelers. They're notorious cheap shot artists.
Oh, please.
Notorious.
Look, the bottom line, and then we'll move on. But let me just say this about the Welker hit. The ball is deflected 10 or 15 yards in front of Welker. So the timing looks off. It looks more severe than what it was. Clark is just trying to time the hit. He's not anticipating the ball getting deflected. He thinks the ball is going to arrive at a moment. Clark's trying to get there at the same moment that the ball does and lay a lick on your friend Welker.
Well, I didn't like it.
All right, I'm sorry you didn't like it. How'd you like the 22-point win that the Steelers had?
I feel like we gave you the game, and I'd love to see you again in the playoffs.
Really, only you and New England fans could somehow spin this that you were this close to winning that game.
Should have been up by 14 at the half.
All right, either way, the good news for you is, and I'm pleased to extend the olive branch to you and be the first to let you know that the Patriots are still going to make the playoffs and still very well may win that division. The Jets ain't going to Seattle in Mike Holmgren's last game and winning when Brett Favre's been as atrocious as he's been.
But the Dolphins, we could still get locked out even if the Jets lose that game.
Jets then return back to the Meadowlands and knock off the Dolphins, giving you the division
crown. That would be good. We could use Dallas could solve everything by just beating Baltimore.
Yeah, I know.
That would really help. And it seems like that's a game they should win.
Agreed.
I think they're better than Baltimore. But it's a weird season. I can't remember having this many playoff spots and scenarios and number one seeds and wild cards. And then on the flip side, you have this horrible Cardinals team has already clinched a spot.
Yeah.
And then mailed it in last week. It's like, you have no shame. You're going to finish 8-8 in your division.
And we know one way or the other that the Broncos or the Chargers are going to get a division, are going to get a playoff spot. Well, as far as that goes, what do you think about this? I've thrown this one out there. The Steelers and Titans play on Sunday.
Yeah.
Wouldn't both coaches do well to sort of treat it almost like a preseason game? In other words, not show the full package, the full scheme, because optimistically for both teams, they hope to play one another again they both hope to win their first round playoff game and then go to the AFC title game, and presumably they'll play one another if the seeds play out. So shouldn't both teams be inclined to sort of lay back and not show exactly what they're going to do with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line 3 weeks later?
Well, how are you going to lay back? Like
I just think I just don't think you blitz, and if you're the Steelers, I just think you rein it in a little bit. You simplify, so, you run some basic sorts of, because I understand that it would be nice to have the first overall seed, but as your Patriots have taught Pittsburgh Steeler fans twice in the 21st century,
yes,
home field advantage throughout the playoffs, it doesn't guarantee you a ticket to the Super Bowl.
Well, and beyond that, and the Steelers would never do this, but I think they're really better off playing in Tennessee than Pittsburgh with that field.
In a weird way,
it's
true.
That field is going to kill them.
I know that I've heard you talking about this several times.
I'm very passionate about it.
I hear what you're saying, and it does make sense, but I think you go too far saying that the Steelers would be better served not having even had a bye. I mean, obviously,
well,
the
bye is what you want. Yeah,
right.
I agree with that. But are you really frightened going into Tennessee?
No, yeah, but that's the other point of it, is does it really make a difference in the AFC this season in particular? Who cares if you have the first or second seed? The sixth seed is for the first time, I think, I don't know if this is the first time ever off the top of my head, but there's a good chance that the two wild card teams are going to win. They're going to be favored, and they're going to win those games. Baltimore, let's say Baltimore has the sixth seed. Is Baltimore going to go into New York or Miami? Let's say that one of those two teams takes it. Is Baltimore going to lose to either one of those teams? I don't think so. And then
Miami.
Indianapolis at Baltimore Pats is another issue, though.
Well, I talked about this with Collinsworth. The Pats get six. They play Jets or Miami at three. I feel like they could win that game.
Oh, yeah.
Then you go round two.
I don't doubt it, right.
If Tennessee's the one seed, absolutely feel like we could beat Tennessee. Then you go round three, AFC Championship, in Pittsburgh, rainy field.
I can't take it.
We're in that game.
In
that game.
The Patriots must not make the playoffs for exactly that scenario.
Well, the X factor is that we've lost like 17 guys.
Yeah, I know.
No, I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying, like, at some point you can lose too many guys. I think the Giants kind of reached that point. Like, they lost Asamura, whatever you say his name. They lost Strahan.
Umanyora,
whatever, Asamura.
What are you, a 73-year-old man?
Can't,
you can't pronounce a name?
I've never mastered his name, so I just call him Asamura. Strahan. Now Jacobs is hurt. Plax is out. Probably four of their seven best guys last year.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You can go too far sometimes.
Absolutely. And that is one of the things that, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because the Giants and the Titans have both benefited from virtually no health issues once the season started. Now it's starting to catch up with them. But listen, I get where you're coming from, because I've played the game myself. It's the Lou Holtz way. It's the Lou Holtz strategy of, we have no chance of winning this thing. We'll be lucky to even be in the game. I know that's where you, as a Red Sox fan, feel the most comfortable to be the big underdog.
Why would I think this Patriots team could win the Super Bowl? I don't understand what we do that well.
Because apparently Commissioner Goody Goodydell is too busy cracking down on all the ne'er-do-wells in the league except when it comes to your New England Patriots. He refuses to do anything, and they apparently have carte blanche to do whatever they want.
Well, you said the Patriots were going to when you said the Steelers, like, do you potentially scale things back, save some stuff for the playoffs, are you suggesting that their offense should suck for 58 minutes instead of 56. You're saying they should wait until the 2-minute warning now to look good on offense?
Crack all the whys you want about Seven and company, but Seven just week after week adds to the legend.
Who called him Seven? Mike Tomlin?
That's right.
Yeah, you were so happy with that.
Coach Tomlin apparently is a fan of the podcast. I appreciate it.
I've said this to you. I love Coach Tomlin.
He's
I can't get enough of him. He's really good. I'd like to see him in other scenarios.
I like that he does. What do you call it? The butt bump or something? You know,
Chest pump, and he'll also do. He's really good at the fired up fist pump.
Yeah.
Like the charging out in the field fist pump. I actually thought Mike McCarthy was the best, but Tomlin unleashed one either last week or 2 weeks ago that was like magical.
Yeah.
Really good. And if I'm a football player in that team, I am fired up that my coach. Versus like having Romeo Crennel or Andy Reid. Like, how do you get fired up for these guys? These guys are just there like they're dead bodies, basically.
I'd love to see. That's what I was thinking about when I saw the moment that I saw Tomlin doing that, jumping up and chest bumping his players a couple of weekends ago. I was thinking Vince Lombardi. I'd love to see him having done that. Was that his thing, Tom Landry?
Well, I think back in the day, the coaches did the little quick – kind of awkward fist pump.
Yeah.
They did kind of, it was very like 50s, and the way they celebrated was very,
come on, fellas!
Yeah, it was like that kind of thing with the quick ones. And they wear the hats. And
by the way, speaking of that, I know you're a huge fan of it. The greatest game ever played is just spectacular.
I promoted it yesterday. I'm really hoping. Although, again, it has to be on HD when you watch it. I don't think Classic bangs it out as well.
I mean, but there are a couple of things that stood out to me. The game really does seem like it was a gem. But a couple of things that are funny about it. First of all, that kicking the ball through the uprights was such a dicey proposition back then. It's funny to think about
Sunday.
That.
Yeah, first of all, that nobody figured out a better way to kick field goals.
Yeah,
took it to like the 70s. People were like, hey, what if I did it this way?
I know. Yeah, you have all your ideas about you know, adjusting what the field goal is worth, which is interesting. How about you just go back to you have to be a head-on kicker. You cannot bring over European guys who are soccer stars to sidewind and kick 58-yard field goals. It does sort of disrupt the nature of the game or the way it was laid out back then in the mid 20th century. It's funny though.
You're saying outlaw the soccer style kick.
Yeah, maybe a guy has to play some other position. He can't solely be your kicker. Pat Summerall kicking the ball through the uprights is a great sight in that game.
That would kind of be like when the long snapper disappears and like the linebacker has to suddenly become the long snapper. It's much more fun.
Yeah, well, that's exactly, you know, people talk about the lucky Steelers. I know you and your dear friend Sal love making fun of how lucky the Steelers are, but how about the fact that had the long snapper not gotten hurt against the Giants, the Steelers might be looking even better right now. But
they've definitely had one of the more interesting seasons I can remember.
It's a wash.
A team.
They should have beaten the Colts. They should have beaten the Giants, and they won a couple games that maybe they shouldn't have. So it's they're right where they should be.
And we both agree that Roethlisberger is definitely at least a little hurt.
Yeah, I think that we're going to
find out
in the offseason that he has a bum wing. I mean, he can't get the ball downfield, really.
Partial separated shoulders.
Something like that. And the other thing is they don't move him around at all, really. I mean, only in the last couple of weeks, and not coincidentally, he's doing better. When they start moving him out of the pocket, what the reluctance to do that is, I can't figure out. That's when he's most dangerous.
Well, that's what Philly took so long for them to realize. That McNabb, for whatever reason, the first like 11, 12 weeks, they just wouldn't move him around or try QB sneaks with him.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he was hurt or he was just fat.
Yeah.
Or out of shape. Like he just told them, like, guys, I don't want to run more than like 5 yards if you could.
That's the only thing I can think of too with the Steelers. He must say, I'm really not in a place where I should be. You know, trying on fourth and inches or fourth and goal. I shouldn't be the guy trying to carry it across.
The other problem is he's kind of a wuss. I mean,
he's very soft.
Injuries. Nobody milks injuries. Like
yeah, I know, I know. Yeah, that's he's nothing if not soft. Yeah, he gets in comes within an inch of his life in a motorcycle accident, then loses a spleen or whatever it was, a gallbladder surgery right before the season, then plays the entire year. Yes, he is.
But complaining the whole time about it.
Yeah, Tom Brady got
exactly.
A boo-boo.
Tom Brady.
Gets a boo-boo on his knee and declares himself out for the entire
season. Tom Brady has
season.
An IV that he has to get once every day to fight the infection in his knee. I still come back next year.
I still resent him for everybody loves the, you know, Giselle. He really made a mistake. Moynihan, the foxier of the two.
Yeah, but the crazier of the two.
Yeah, well, listen. Some fellas dig that.
Well, the fact that she did the initials J-E-T Moynihan. Slap in the face.
I guess he kind of deserved it.
I was thinking, trying to decide how mad I would be if I was Brady and he did that, and I really think there would be a murder.
Oh, no.
I think I might kill her for that.
No, you want to go the other way. You want to know, what you want to do is make your mark, and really, what statement that you really, that you know, you've won
Giselle.
That battle, right?
Yeah. So you're saying like...
Well, no, also that you know that Moynihan knows, like, this guy is so in my head, no matter what I go on to do, that I feel that I have to devote a child's name to putting a dig into him.
So you go to, like, Mexico with Giselle, and then you send the O-Photo photos out after, and you put her name on it and send it to Bridget, and then afterwards, hey, I really apologize for that. I didn't realize you were on that list. It's like 1,000 pictures of them frolicking in the beach.
That's right.
That would be good to it's really – you know, he got kind of a bum rap. I think if you break up with somebody, a couple months pass, they then announce that they're pregnant. You've already moved on. You have a girlfriend. I'm not – like if this had happened to us, I'm not sure – what is the right move? And what is he supposed to dump Giselle and marry Bridget because she's pregnant? Like,
yeah, no, it's a fair point. You're right.
How does somebody
get
pregnant after 4 years?
Aesthetically, I'm just saying I would have gotten Moynihan instead of Giselle, just based on purely surface.
Because you like crazy women?
I'm saying Moynihan's a fox.
All right.
No? Dynamite.
Giselle's by far the most successful supermodel on the planet and has her own money and her own life and her own career. What I found with these celebrities is I think they like dating people who also have careers and kind of understand that they, you know, it's their weeks that you just can't hang out and do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that.
And I find that happening with my own wife, you know, being a major celebrity and traveling around the world. And my wife
smoking cigarettes with Kyle, the PA.
Yeah, and my wife, I think, sometimes has trouble. Whereas if I was married to Megan Fox, maybe, you know, Megan would give me a little more leeway.
Yeah,
when
I see
what
you're...
I tell a story about smoking a cig with Don Draper and the Killers and Kyle the PA.
So now this
there
is
wouldn't
you...
be resentment.
Are you ruminating now about the next stage of your life now? I'm sorry, wife. It's just a sports gal. It just ain't working out for us.
No, unfortunately, I still like her. I think it would be a lot easier if I didn't.
Yeah. By the way.
Yeah.
She... You know, I do the jerk list on my podcast, and I list off all of society's jerks and creeps. The sports gal has been on it not once but twice for disparaging the city of Pittsburgh and disparaging me in some way. But she redeemed herself recently. She brought over a delicious chocolate pie.
So she's not going to be one of the creeps of the year candidates?
No.
Do we have the creeps of the year?
We do have them, yes.
Do you want to announce the candidates and then... for next week on your show, you will announce the winner, or do you?
Yeah,
want to
no, I'm going to do. As a matter of fact, I'm going to leave you here, and then I'm going to go and record the podcast today with the final. I'm going to announce the creep of the year here, but I do have the candidates. But
You can't break creep of the year on here.
I'd rather
double
not.
Up.
I'd rather not. Listen, this.
Yeah, hey, you know what you should do is do it with your buddy John Hamm. Maybe he'd be interested.
Yeah, me and.
Wait
Hamm.
A second, though. We got to. I threw something out at the beginning of the podcast.
Oh, yeah,
we
go ahead.
30-minute digression.
Sure.
It makes us both angry that only certain people are privy to these coaches' tapes.
Yeah.
I write a football column every Friday on a major sports website. People have come to trust my expertise as I go 8-8 every week. I deserve the coaches' tapes.
Well,
that might have
swung
20 games for me.
Is that the issue? I mean, you wouldn't be able to get them, or is it just laziness? You're not investigating enough, hard enough.
No, they don't. They mail them to like a select few, or you can go to, if you live like
that's
in New York, New Jersey, you can go to NFL Films and watch them there and not leave with them.
That's what I was just going to ask you. You know, that's obviously what Jaws and Hodge do because they're
right.
Pretty well versed themselves.
I think they take care of certain people. You know, obviously, and I don't deserve to be one of those people, but I'm not one of those people. But I feel like Collinsworth has an advantage. That's an inherent advantage.
Yes, I agree with you. You know, there are a couple things. I mentioned to Hodge last year that a great idea. This would be a great little piece of technology, and it seems like every year – one of the networks that covers the NFL unveils some new little tweak, some new feature. How about this? What about the downfield camera? The camera that shows you basically what you're talking about, the coach's film. We always see the QB. We see him running around, dodging rushers, and then throwing the ball downfield. But we don't know where he's throwing the ball until the camera cuts to that. Wouldn't it be great if there was a little inset camera during the play, and you could see what was happening downfield. Wouldn't that be awesome? Randy Moss is wide open. Throw it to him. You know, that kind of thing.
What's interesting is the inset is something that kind of disappeared in the 70s.
It did.
They experimented with it, and for some reason it was decided that it was a failure, and we've never seen it again. But I always thought, here's a great, you know, when a team wins a title or, you know, they win the end of a series and everyone's celebrating – and you want to see your guys celebrate, but they'll cut for 10 seconds to the shot of the other team celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll cut to the stands, these complete strangers. 15 seconds has passed before you get to see it. I think they should go to like the quartet of four different things happening at the same time. And we could just get a whole...
That's awesome.
Cornucopia.
Woodstock,
why
basically.
Wouldn't they do that?
Woodstock, the Woodstock documentary basically
do
does
that.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
They could do that with every game. Do a quarter the screen and show you what's happening at the line of scrimmage, downfield, so on. That would be fantastic.
They have collectively decided, I think what happened is when they did the game with no announcers in the early 80s, and everybody was like, what the hell just happened? And they were like, all right, let's not experiment anymore. And then the XFL had that camera, you know, the thing that hangs down right behind the huddle. And how did the NFL not think of that?
Well, you know, I actually remember that college football used that in the early 80s. I remember watching an Orange Bowl with Washington in it. But yeah, they do that. And yeah, I'd love to, you know, here's the biggest disconnect for us who are crazy or who are over the top with intensity for football. You know, any of us, unless we're being pretentious, would admit that we have no idea what makes a good offensive lineman. I think that is the biggest gap between us and the true experts.
You know why?
Why?
And I talked about this with Collinsworth, and he says how when he watches a game, he does not watch the ball. He watches the line. He watches receivers. So the play's unfolding, and Seven is limping back to throw his latest duck. And we're watching Seven hold the ball because we're fans. And
right.
You watch where the ball goes. But the real football guys are watching the line and everything else, and they're not even looking at the ball.
Yeah,
and
but
that's the difference.
I get that, but we don't really know. Like we talk about it's a great subject of conversation in bars around the country. Is we got to do something better about we got to improve our right guard situation. We need to get a better right tackle. Like, do we really have the ability to evaluate that?
I don't think we have
any sense why Alan Faneca is the most dominant left guard in the AFC.
Not anymore. I don't know.
But am I right? Yeah, like we talk about that. Listen, they're all 340-pound paunchy guys. We can't really discern
who's better than the other. Well, there's two ways to tell. And this is one advantage of that center camera is you can see if the line is pushing the other line back or if the offensive line is pushing the defensive line back. You can kind of see that.
Mm-hmm.
It's one or the other, or they just kind of stay still. And then the other is on short yardage, teams will always run behind the same two guys. And if they're consistently getting that 1 yard, 2 yards, then you figure, all right, those guys have to be good. Other than that, we have no idea who's good.
Yeah, that's a great point.
If somebody gets five sacks in a game against your left tackle, it's probably a sign your left tackle stinks.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the center and the paint, like everybody's like, Dan Copen, we locked him up. Like, I don't know if he's good. How do I know
that's
if Dan
exactly
Copen's
right.
good?
Yeah. It really must be some skill to be able to evaluate. Yeah, this 20-year-old kid, he's going to be an awesome left tackle in the NFL.
Right.
That
great
must be the hardest thing to figure out. But, you know, by the way, I just want to say one more thing about about the Steelers, but just to show you.
I can't wait.
I know you think I'm biased. I'm not. Of course, I'm rooting for them, but the way that you and Cousin Sal carry on as though, I mean, it's hypocritical, that as though I can't see the reality of it. The Steelers are in a lot of trouble come the playoffs. They can't make a yard when they need it. How far can they? Are they really going to the Super Bowl when they can't get a push at fourth and inches or fourth and goal? That's a real issue.
You know what's interesting is that they never, usually when this happens, the team will find some random dude who is like seventh round pick or off the waiver wire, like Ahmad Bradshaw last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, where did this guy come from? This guy's actually the
It's funny you
place.
Say that. The Steelers do have an undrafted guy named Gary Russell who's done a better job. But
I thought Gary Russell was going to be that guy, and it never – or maybe it hasn't manifested itself yet. It hasn't happened yet.
But it is really 1 through 6, depending on how it shakes out. You know, let's assume the Patriots do win the division and the Ravens end up with the 6th seed. How do you make any sense of who's going to go to the Super Bowl out of that group?
You don't know. And as we said, like, I don't know how great the Steelers' home field advantage is. I don't know how great Tennessee's home field advantage is. So it's these games are just going to be dead even. I guess a lot of it will depend on the weather. I think Miami would get affected in cold weather potentially.
I think the Ravens, if you take out the Flacco. Giants game, well, I mean, Flacco
is bad in your game.
He wasn't great, but he is playing statistically. I have a hard time embracing the notion that this is one of the all-time great defenses in the Steel Curtain this year is one of the all-time great.
Statistically, is that the case?
No team has ever for 14 games. Oh, actually, they tied, the L.A. Rams from way back. They're the first team since the Rams to keep at the opponent under 300 yards for the first 14 games of the season. Yeah,
that's interesting.
They're dominant.
I will always think the 85 Bears were the best DA I've ever seen. I just have never seen a defense like that. You just felt like you had no chance to get those guys. But the underrated defense was that 76 Steelers team.
I don't know.
The year Bradshaw got hurt.
Mike Kruzak, yeah, the Steelers.
And there was like, they lost early. I think they started out like 1-3.
Their last 9 games, they allowed an average of roughly 3 points a game.
Yeah, I don't think they gave up a touchdown for like 2 months.
We'll
never see that again because teams throw more now. I think in the 70s, you ran the ball out more and it was more possible.
You talk about injuries. They played Oakland for a trip to the Super Bowl and lost that game because they had no Franco and no Rocky Blyer. Oh, by the way, what do you have to say about Franco now too? I heard what you were saying about with Sal. You have something bad to say about Franco?
I said Tomlinson's going to be the new Franco.
Which means what?
Which means he's just going to run out of bounds every time somebody comes near him.
Yeah, Franco ran out of bounds on his way to 12,000 yards.
Oh, give me a break. Yeah, the top 3 most loathsome things ever about Steelers fans is the defense of Franco.
I know. Well, it is absurd that... It's absurd that the man who was the feature back in 4 Super Bowl wins and the most famous play in NFL history would be praised by the local fan base.
Even in 4th grade, Franco made me mad and I felt like he was overrated. I didn't even know what the word overrated meant and I said whatever the word you would say when you were 8.
How can he possibly, by definition, be called overrated when everyone like you is dismissive of him? He's underrated, in other words.
Oh, please.
Anyway, I don't want to get caught up in more of that.
Wait, I got to tell you one thing. So I had this dream last night that we were doing the podcast,
mm-hmm.
and we had this huge argument about what was the greatest dog in the history of movies or television.
Wow.
The dog you would have wanted most.
Hmm.
And then I woke up and I thought, man, that was like a sign from God. It was like when God gives you those visions and when you're sleeping that you should, mm-hmm. you know, something horrible is going to happen or you should do this. So now I feel like we have to talk about the greatest dog ever.
Well, that's great.
I would go with Hooch.
Hooch, really?
I've had it in a long time, and I think I go with Hooch.
I'm surprised by that
one
a little
bit. Yeah, I really liked Hooch.
Well, you just threw this one at me.
No cartoon dogs. I know, I blindsided it. Can't use Scooby.
I was going to go underdog. I mean, he's a superhero who can save me, after all.
Where would the Frasier dog rank for you?
Not interested.
Not interested in the Frasier dog?
Yeah, no. What about Rocky's dog?
Buckus, I think, is in the mix.
Yeah,
I think he's top 3.
Yeah, a little bit of slobber, though, you know, all over
he
your
did
house.
Have a lot of slobber. He didn't mind the fact that Rocky and Adrian had such a dysfunctional relationship.
You got Rin Tin Tin, another good dog for, you know, to keep away the ne'er-do-wells. Didn't he fight crime? I never saw that show.
Never saw that show. The Bradys had Tiger.
Yeah, but yeah, he apparently he carried a lot of pollens or something around on his body. By the way, it's funny you bring that up. I was just thinking about this. I have no idea what made me think about this.
It was God. It was God who made you think of it.
If Tiger, the episode, the famous episode when Jan is allergic to the dog. Remember that? And we think she's allergic to Mr. Brady.
Right.
And it turns out she's just allergic to Tiger.
Yeah.
And then, what are we going to do? And then they change his powder. And so everything is fine at the end. Mm. What if it was just that she was allergic, allergic to Tiger. Wouldn't that ruin the already tenuous situation in the Brady home? Wouldn't the Brady boys go crazy about Jan? Like, no, we're not getting rid of Tiger. We're getting rid of these girls who you brought into our house.
Yeah.
And what a premise for a sitcom, by the way. Hey, the widower and the widow, both significant others died horrifically, apparently, in some way. Died at a young age.
It was never explained.
And now they've come together and everything's happy. No one's like, I miss Mom!
It was never explained why they were immediately called Dad and Mom.
Mm-hmm.
And there was never the You're Not My Mother episode or You're Not My Dad episode.
Yeah, very short. Well, you're gonna have to. Yeah, I'm gonna have to think about
the best
dog. Yeah, we've got to be missing some obvious ones, right?
As I said, I thought
Spuds
of it last
McKenzie.
Night.
He was what a party. About, he was a party animal. I mean, he liked to have fun.
Air Bud would have been fun because you could have played catch with him.
Oh, I just got it. Strange what? Brew. I can't think of the name of the dog, but he could fly.
Yeah.
He would fly for beer. The McKenzie brothers, do it again.
I still think Hooch actually saved Turner's life, and I think
hard to argue with that.
And I don't want to give a spoiler alert for a movie that's been 18 years old, but when Hooch goes, it's tough. That's an underrated movie death to lose Hooch. it's right up there with Fredo getting killed for me.
You just did ruin it for me. I sadly never took that one in.
You know what I did to Carrie? Because Carrie, my wife, she's the biggest dog lover ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they had never seen Turner and Hooch and had no idea how it ended. And for the first hour, she was like, he's not going to die, right? He's not going to say, oh, no, come on, it's a family comedy. And she died, and it was like the worst thing I ever
Why before. Would they have him die? I thought it was just like a cop buddy picture with one of the buddies being a pooch.
It's really one of the strange movie decisions ever. It really is. There's no reason he died other than – and what I think happened was if you watch it, I think they did one of those things where Hooch just died. And that they screen it for the people, and there must have been like a riot because then they add on the end of the scene where it's like, oh, he got a puppy that looks like Hooch. Oh, it's back. And it's like so thrown in and makes no sense whatsoever. Hey, here's one for you. I'm going to blindside you with another one.
All right.
This was an email chain that was going on yesterday with the ESPN guys, including Connor Shaw, the guy who hates when I have my friend on my podcast. Real name Connor Shaw, but we call him Connor Shaw. Top four. Biggest stars of the 80s, sports, entertainment, music, whatever. Top four biggest stars.
Well, there are a couple of easy ones, right? Michael Jackson's
definitely number one.
The
list, right.
He's got to be number one.
Right. I have four. It's the Mount Rushmore of 80s stars.
And there's no arguing it once you get them, right?
We came up with the list that had to be the four, but it took like a while to get there.
What about Schwarzenegger?
Schwarzenegger's on the cusp. It depends how you feel. Well, I'll just tell you who it came up. Well,
Cruz, Madonna.
There's one that we forgot, and then when we realized we forgot him, we were all mad.
Sports.
Not sports, movies.
Oh, wait, I thought you mentioned that one.
Because the three guys we thought of were Cruz, Stallone, and Arnold.
Uh-huh.
But there's a fourth guy who's definitely was bigger than all three of those guys, and we didn't think of it for probably 4 hours.
In the 80s.
In the 80s. It's so weird, and you're not thinking of it either. It's
not like, Han Solo.
I think he's now become underrated. Han Solo came up, but no. Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy has to be top four biggest stars of the 80s.
Really?
Yeah.
He starts out on SNL.
He's on
Trading
an iconic
places.
Show, SNL. Trading Places, Beverly Hills Cop,
hours,
48
right.
Hours.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Coming to America, Golden Child. He made like $2 billion with five movies.
Why did you throw Golden Child
Golden Child
in
made
there?
Money.
It did?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
That made a lot of – all those movies –
That's a pretty good
combined,
one.
He made more money than any star from – we looked it up. I mean, he's made over $1 billion.
Well, you bring up Stallone. Oh, you know, and by the way, before anything else, I've been remiss. I meant to congratulate you right at the top. You must be over the moon about the recent announcement of the former Greg White, the defensive end of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who has changed his name.
Was it definitely a Teen Wolf thing?
It is absolutely a Teen Wolf thing. He said it because he enjoyed the name Styles from Teen Wolf, and you as the greatest proponent of Teen
the
Wolf.
The world's preeminent Teen
you really
Wolf
are.
Expert.
Yes. Teen yeah. Wolfologist. You must be thrilled about this.
I'm not going to lie. I've actually watched the final game and tried to figure out what Michael J. Fox's stats were.
As a matter of fact, it's been so long. Yeah, that's exactly right. I had just watched it in summertime last time I was on the podcast.
There's some issues because they replay the same shot three or four times.
Yeah.
So do you count the shot that is clearly a replay of the shot we saw before? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I did put his numbers together actually as best I could, and he had a banner game. There's no question, but of course making the free throw.
He might have had a triple double with steals.
Yeah, he did.
Points, assists, steals. It might have been like, so I was thinking like something like a 27-11-10.
Uh huh. But the guy, you know, the guy on the Dragons on the other team, the star of the other team, standing directly under the hoop. I mean, that a high school kid who's 17 years of age.
Such a flagrant violation.
So intimidating, even to the referees, that they don't tell him, that's a vile. You can't stand under the basket like that while the opponent shoots the free throws. Really says something about him.
I was thinking it would be great if that actually happened in a real game. Like game two of the 2009 finals, and Kobe just stands under the basket while Paul Pierce is shooting.
Didn't Gilbert Arenas, I'm trying to think of which way it went, didn't Arenas say something to LeBron when he was on the free throw line trying to win a game?
Then they passed the rule.
Yeah, Gilbert should have just gone and stood directly underneath the hoop.
Joe Mead?
Yeah.
How many minutes do we have left on the tape?
21.
Oh, okay, we're in good shape. Because we're limiting this to an hour today because the readers constantly complain when it goes over an hour.
Oh, that's fair enough. All right, I got a quick one for you.
Yeah, you have a couple things you wanted to
get. I do. Well, I just want to ask you a couple.
Hey, Bill, real quick. I'm actually starting to notice a little more. Can you get your input up a little bit and Dave's down?
Uh-oh.
That's a slap in the face.
Joe, leave that in, by the way. I don't think people realize that I do these from my house, and it's basically a headphone attached to this little podcast device with input volume. And sometimes, you know, I can't, like, lean away from the microphone, so it'll pick up, like, every little giggle. And every, like, if I'm sick and I'm wheezing, it'll pick up the wheezing. So it's not like, Joe, how could we get a more high-tech thing going here?
I don't know, Bill.
How do I get, like, the Mike and Mike desk with the bobbleheads?
I got to move to Bristol?
Yeah. All right. I guess I'll settle with this device then. So what do you want to get to, Dave Davishek?
All right. I want to ask you this one. This is an interesting thing that we batted around on the podcast. I have a lot of these sorts of questions come up.
So you have a podcast that you can get to in the ESPN.com Pod Center. You go to local.
That's right.
It's a Dave Davishek On Demand.
Correct. You can go to it shows up on page 2 4 days
on
a week.
On page 2 it's on. Right.
And 710ESPN.com and look for the Damashek tab. And
PittsburghBlowhard.com.
Oh, please.
You have that too, right?
How dare you attack me with that sort of nonsense?
Pitt Blowhard or is it PittsburghBlowhard.com?
Please. Anyway, I know. Look, hey, you know what? I'm not ashamed of the fact that I don't care if you're black or white. All I care about is if you're black and gold. That's right. I got to trademark that one.
That's
I like
a good
that
one. That's a good one. That's right up there with why not? What was it? Why not us? No. What did the Philly fans do? Why can't us?
Something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, how about this? Philadelphia's own, their favorite son, Rocky Balboa.
Mm-hmm.
He took on some great heavyweights.
Mm-hmm.
His toughest foe.
Toughest foe?
Toughest foe.
Be Drago.
That's the easy answer.
The CompuStat numbers from that fight. I mean, he took 3,000 punches in 15 rounds.
All right, but listen. I would expect you to say that, but consider. I go Creed. I go Apollo Creed.
In Creed Balboa 1?
No, I go the Count of Monte Fisto. I'm just talking about the fact that, first of all, in Rocky, in the original Rocky, he's already over the hill, one. And two, he doesn't even train. He takes his mistake is taking the stallion too lightly. But when we meet him, he's already the greatest heavyweight of all time.
So you're saying the second fight would be his toughest foe?
I'm just saying that the toughest fighter, everybody in their respective primes.
Oh, then it was Creed.
It is Creed.
Because Creed was, I think, undefeated.
Right. I mean, listen, so Creed is the greatest heavyweight of all time. Drago.
Toughest fight was Drago, though.
Listen.
He took the most punishment.
He took a beating. And, you know, of course, it's hard to justify Drago being the lesser foe than Creed when he killed Creed. But again, Creed's, you know, 10 years retired by the point that he gets into the ring.
But Rocky didn't have a cut man for that fight. He had Polly and Apollo's trainer that he met 5 minutes before, and that was his corner for that fight. At least in Rocky 1 and 2, he had like a real corner. Like, he had a cut in his eye that could fix it.
Yeah.
Who was fixing his eye in Rocky 4? Polly? Hold on, Rocky. Let me put the scotch down.
Well, how about the fact, though, you know, first of all, Drago has everything in his favor. He's on his home field, essentially. You know, Balboa has flown to Siberia to do his training.
Yep.
He's got the fans behind behind him. But the interesting thing that happens in that picture is that Drago is fighting. He's the champion of the world. Or is it? No, I guess he's not the champion at that point. But either way, his fan base is there to support him. And Balboa comes in there. And by the middle of the fight, the crowd turns against their own guy, Drago. What a bunch of front runners when Rocky starts to take the fight.
And ironically, not even probably in the top five most ludicrous things that happened in that movie. There are like six other things. Where do you stand on Pump Up the Volume?
I've never seen it.
So the answer would be you have no stance.
Yeah, N-A.
Where do you stand on Ghost, which was once a drama, now should have to actually in the title say comedy?
What particularly catches your attention?
Have you watched Ghost?
No, I haven't seen it in some time.
I got sucked into the last 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure there's more, but, you know, everything Swayze does in the movie is fantastic. But I jumped out, I was flicking channels, and it was a scene when he's about to go into Whoopi Goldberg's body.
Mm-hmm.
So he can touch Demi Moore.
Oh, yeah.
That scene is, that is like riotously funny. But then the ending, the special effects are so bad.
The little monsters come up.
In the 90s, are like, ooh, the little monsters. But there, you watch it 20 years later, these little fake black shadows with these weird red eyes. I mean, it's like on YouTube, you have better special effects. But the I got to say, though, and then the ending with the light on Swayze as he looks down and away. But I got to say, that movie kind of freaks me out. Like, what if hell really is like that? Like, you die, and then you leave your body, and you look back at your dead body, and then these little dark monsters come up and they pull you down and that's it. That's your eternity.
Well, I don't worry so much about that. Yeah. I know I count myself among the righteous, so I'm not worried so much about that.
I do too. I'm saying, but that puts the fear of God in me that I'll ever do, you know, something horrible.
Well, what about the other side of it though? That even if things do go your way, think about, you know, Swayze is in his prime. He's 35, let's say he's 30, 35, you know, good looking young fella in the picture. And then Demi Moore, who he then, as he leaves off to go to heaven, he says, you know, I'll see you soon. And they're in love forever. And he knows they now both realize this is just a small gap of time. And then we're going to be together for eternity. Except for this, the movie establishes that when you die, that's the way you look going into eternity.
So now
Swayze's going to be like, what I do to deserve the short end of the stick? I got this 84-year-old broad now. I got to be with her for eternity. Deal's off, baby.
Yeah, they got to establish some sort of age for heaven. Maybe you should be able to announce ahead of time. I'd like to go in at age 29.
Yeah.
I feel good at 29. That's my age.
When any older person dies, a significant person, they always show on CNN or whoever it is, you know, they
show the oldest, worst picture.
They'll show, like, you know, the timeline, 1921 to 2008, and they'll just show the image of that person. Why do they always show them as decrepit? I want it to be known here and now. I want me in my prime, in my youth, with a full head of hair and, you know, some good cut, you know, not a double chin and a pot belly and everything. Oh, my very best. You know, me in my hoops uniform when I was 17 or something.
That's, you know what else is a really, really funny, terrible, horrible, I can't believe that happened scene, which I missed when on the reviewing, but the scene with what is she making, like pottery?
Yeah.
And that corny song comes on and Swayze comes over and he starts playing with the pottery, which looks like a phallus. Let's be honest. This is a mature conversation for whatever we say at the beginning.
Please be advised.
It's a phallus. She's playing with a phallus. He comes in. He's like, hey, I'd love a crack of that phallus. And they play with a mud phallus, rub it all over each other and start going at it. I remember seeing that in the theater and feeling awkward. 18 years later, it is astounding.
That's how couples who've been together for a while keep things vital. You know,
by throwing phallic pottery at each other.
Well, you mentioned the creepiest scene in that movie, the most underrated, one of the all-time creepiest, most underrated creepy scenes, is Swayze jumps into Whoopi's body, and then Whoopi
I already said that.
Right, I know, but then Whoopi and Demi Moore,
for
the next 10 minutes, basically have a very intimate dance and hug, and then a makeout session.
I said that to my wife.
How does Demi Moore get over that hurdle, really? I mean, all right, I get that I buy that you're still around, Swayze, but all right, I'm still making out with Whoopi.
And I said that to my wife as we were watching it. Maybe the smartest decision in Hollywood history is when they switch from Whoopi to Swayze in the scene. If they had just kept it as Whoopi for that whole dance makeout scene,
so right.
A nation is scarred. It was a bit horrible. And anybody too, Whoopi Goldberg. Like I, yeah. Oof. Anyway, rough. What else did we want to get to?
Well, I would like to share with you my nominees for Creep of the Year.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And then also mull this one over too.
Mm-hmm.
The other question we talked about quite a bit: best TV or movie bar. That's kind of a mind bender. The mind immediately Cheers.
We've talked about this privately. Yeah, you said the easy obvious choice is Cheers, but on the other hand,
I go.
You're in Boston with heavyset woman.
I mean,
from
Norm.
The 80s.
Yeah, Norm and Cliff are the regulars there.
And Sam's landing every babe.
Right. You have no chance.
Say your choice because I agree with it.
The Regal Beagle from Three's Company.
Yeah.
Late 70s, Santa Monica, swinging 70s, especially in Southern California. All you need to know is
disco,
Larry Dallas.
The disco coke era?
Yeah, that's exactly.
No, I mean, pre-AIDS.
Yeah.
No limits on anything. You just did what you wanted to do.
All you need to know is Larry Dallas does pretty well in there. You know,
I would say really well.
Yeah. I mean, for given who he is, that he regularly goes to the Beagle and
well, how about Jack Tripper did well despite having the so I'm living with these two girls and I pretend I'm gay. Would you like to have dinner with me tonight?
Wow.
That worked for Jack Tripper for 5 years. Jack Tripper landed a variety of babes.
Yeah, but we've talked about this at length before. But listen, Tripper isn't the one who's got the short end of the stick. Somehow he moves in. He's basically a drifter. He moves in with these two women who
They needed a roommate.
Yeah, I know, but then they both move into single beds. They're basically his concubine. They share a room in single beds like a dorm room kind of thing. Meanwhile, the room next door, he puts a water bed in there. He brings women in and out the door all the time.
Yeah.
But if either one of those women sees fit to bring a man in, for whatever reason, Jack queers the deal. He ruins it for them. He never lets them have a woman. So basically,
it's mid-70s.
They're kept women, and then it's all that weird... The paradox that Mr. Roper and Mr. Furley are so backwards that they won't accept the idea in the 70s of men and women living together, but open-minded enough. Oh, he's gay? Oh, that's fine. I'm happy to have a gay guy living with me.
that I can demean.
But shame the devil if single people who of opposite sex.
It was
sex
an idea that worked in, like, 1976, but by 1982, maybe he didn't have – maybe Mr. Furley would have been okay.
Yeah, what are the –
All right, get
especially
to the...
with his own questionable sexuality, Furley, and his frilly
clothes. Well, that was the other thing. I mean, that was – they were clearly a double entendre there.
All right.
With Mr. Furley. Do the
All right. Well, I know. We're not treading new soil here, but it's always fun to talk Three's Company. All right. So let's talk about the...
Listen, the under 30 audience was delighted by that conversation.
Listen, go on. Go get the DVDs.
Yeah, go on Hulu.
All right. Here's what I do. Every week, I do the jerk list.
Wednesday.
Right. I track down the jerks and creeps of society. I let them feel the sting of the Han Solo Edition blaster to try and steer them clear of any future jerky behavior. It's been a good year for the most part, I will say. You know,
it's been a creep heavy year.
Yeah, but it has also been. Yeah, it's been. There's been a lot of creepy behavior. We've seen a lot of it in the NFL. But first of all, let's start with the stuff that has happened most recently: the Heisman Trophy. So many traditions have gone the way of the dodo bird in sports, and much to my chagrin. But the ones that remain are like the Thursday NFL games on Thanksgiving being played in Detroit and Dallas for no good reason. Why don't we all get a piece of that action? I don't know about that.
Terrible.
It really is ridiculous. But the Heisman Trophy has ceased to be relevant. And it's sort of like the Stanley Cup. It is not as cool anymore now that the word lightning is etched into it forever now.
Because of Gino Toretta.
Right. Toretta and Wenke is now written on the Heisman Trophy somewhere. It ceases to have any relevance, and yet we continue to make a gigantic deal of who wins the Heisman. Heisman watch. In August, we start. Who's gonna win the Heisman?
Yeah.
Who cares is the answer to that. It's sort of like 20 years ago, the same thing, you would have wanted the Heisman, and you would have wanted Meg Ryan. You know, or Nicolette Sheridan, but how's that look now?
And things have changed.
You don't want it anymore. In fact, let's change it from Heisman to Ryan.
Well, I have the same idea for MVP votes, the Heisman, and the Oscars, and maybe even the Emmys, although the Emmys doesn't really qualify. But if there's not a best, if we can all agree that we're talking ourselves into, then just don't give it out. Give the next year, the guy gets two. It rolls over like in Skins.
It is one of the best.
The Gino Toretto one should have rolled over to the next year.
That's great.
And the next guy had two high. Oh, I get two. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's a good theory, right?
And also, I also love that it creates some of the most foolish arguments you'll hear all sports year long between talking heads is, what? You think that Colt McCoy should win it? You're absurd. You know, yeah. Tim Tebow is much better than Sam Bradford. Really?
No,
you're splitting it with a hair. Who cares?
Well, especially like it's not like the NBA where you get 82 games to figure it out. Mm-hmm. College, there's 11. And half of the games, the team kills the other team.
All right. So that's one of your nominees for Creep of the Year is the Heisman Trophy.
Well,
I don't think
you can't give a trophy the Creep of the Year.
I don't think you tell me what I can do jerk list.
Well, who was Heisman?
The Heisman Trophy.
But what was his name? What was his first name?
John Heisman.
I think you give John Heisman the Creep of the Year.
You don't tell me how I'll play. It's the Heisman Trophy. What is it? You think John Heisman wants?
It's
matter
his trophy.
Of fact, I feel bad for John Heisman that his name has to be associated with the names Wenke and Toretta at this
point. Fair point. Fair point. Okay.
Now next. I don't think the Heisman Trophy is ultimately going to be the Creep of the Year, but I want to throw that one out there.
Okay.
Next up, this one is pretty, I have a real issue with. Donovan McNabb. I really resented a couple of weeks ago that he had no idea the rules for overtime. You know, Commissioner Goody Goodydell is obsessed, and I don't think for the betterment of the league, with the behavior, the off-the-field behavior of players. Now, listen, I understand you don't want criminals in your league. You don't want that stink being put on the league. But the bottom line is his player conduct policy has had absolutely no value whatsoever. T.O. is still a lunatic, and Chris Henry still commits
crime. He's the parent trying to ground the 16-year-old who keeps going out and sneaking out of the bedroom window and going
Matt
to
Jones still did what he did in the offseason in a car. You know, I mean, listen, it goes on and on.
Yeah.
I mean, this has produced no results, no positive results, this player conduct policy. And yet we're obsessed with that and things like end zone celebrations, premeditated end zone celebrations. As though
we haven't
had
any rapes. No rapes this year.
And you know what? You're a glass half full fella.
It was a no rape season. That
Merry
was good.
Merry Christmas, Bill.
That was good.
You're right.
No weird sexual incidents.
But,
that was
a
bonus.
What is the double standard of you can't a premeditated end zone celebration, but the Lambeau leap is fine. What is more premeditated than something that has a name? It's called the Lambeau leap. The players run and jump into the stands, but that's embrace. That's darling that you're allowed to do that, but a guy can't do a little dance in the end zone. It's ridiculous. And while all this is going on, Donovan McNabb doesn't know the rules of one of the most basic rules in the league.
But why is he your creeper? Why is he the nomination, not Goodell?
Because Goodell is also one. We'll get, yeah, so let's, as a side note, yes.
Well, let's just throw him on.
Goody, Goody, Dell, you are also absolutely a prime candidate to go down as
a creeper.
So
McNabb's on the list because he didn't know the rule and he just was.
What hurts the credibility of the league more than that? Off the field behavior, dancing in the end zone, the most ridiculous thing to happen this entire football season. And I'm keeping in mind Al Davis, Brett Favre almost drowning that pool of reporters when he announced his retirement and came back, wasted our entire summer with that nonsense, that whole story. And Donovan McNabb, the most ridiculous thing is he has been a quarterback in the NFL for what, a decade now? He doesn't know that there's an overtime. He doesn't know what the rule of overtime is. That's unreasonable. That's unfathomable to us.
I'm going to say this particular rant smacks a little of the why did the Howls bring so many suitcases on the island?
Really? Why do you say that?
Because everybody's already made the McNabb point.
All right, fine. That brings me to my next nominee for Creep of the Year.
Now I'm nominated for Creep.
Oh, no, it wasn't now. Believe me, the sports guy Bill Simmons for various deeds. Misdeeds,
no.
I should say.
I'm really one of the Creeps of the Year?
Yeah, you could be.
Oh, okay.
You could end up being the Creep of the Year. For your treatment of me, listen, you act like you're
I'm just pointing out.
You sit in your little
McNabb,
sit up here in your ivory tower in up on Mount Pius where your estate is located and disparage me and seem to think that I can't access this material on the online. Well, you're wrong, sir. I have heard what you've said about me and my beloved Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'm not going to stand for it, and there's a price to pay for it.
Fair enough.
All right.
Fair enough. I've been warned.
All right. Now, another city that needs to be talked about, though, Okay. Seattle sports teams, because I can't imagine, I feel bad for the sports fans in Seattle. They have the Mariners, the Seahawks have been abysmal. The two college teams, Washington, Washington State, can't beat anybody but each other.
So who would be the creep in this scenario?
All Washington, Seattle sports teams.
Seattle's failure to provide competent sports
teams. That's right. And the Sonics leaving, they didn't just dump the city of Seattle, but they dumped it for Oklahoma City.
Seattle politicians and rich people?
Yeah, and it's basically, they didn't just dump you. The Sonics didn't just dump you for another guy. You know, it's Julia Roberts dumping Kiefer Sutherland for Lyle Lovett. You know, it's like, wow,
yeah,
the added insult.
Yeah,
you know,
it is pretty bad. I feel terrible for them.
I got to throw one to human babies. I've got a real issue with the human. I have the little baby, and you have two darling little kids yourself. So you know, you probably have seen these Planet Earth documentaries and things about the nature and stuff, and you see a coverage of these remote jungles up, you know, high up in a tree, you know, 1,000 feet in the sky, little baby bird eggs, they hatch and they come out, and then their mama, the day they're born, nudges them off the tree limb, and before they reach the ground, they learn how to fly. But I thought human beings were supposed to be the greatest creature on the face of the earth. And yet, if we left the baby alone for 20 minutes, that'd be the end of it, right?
They're down the stairs, or their fingers in an electric socket.
Right, human babies, overrated. And so I resent them for that.
They crap on themselves.
That's exactly right. And then the other thing is, too, parents of ugly babies. Because now that we all have to go, we all have kids, we all go to the same parties and everything. But do me a favor, leave your ugly baby at home, because then that puts me in an awkward spot when I see the baby. Because you're going to say about, oh, your little girl is so cute, she's so darling. And now I'm forced to oblige you with the same, oh, yeah, cute kid yourself. Like, but now I have to lie, and I don't want to be made a liar, you know, so just leave the ugly kid at home.
Your son's handsome. He looks like Carl Malden. Joe, do we switch quick? We'll switch quick. We got like 2 minutes left, I think, right there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a poker podcast in here. We're going to have to give it a plug if you guys.
Oh, man. All right. Damashek, I knew you'd do. We had to switch tapes. The poker podcast, they're furiously waiting.
It's my fault, yes. Well, you talked about Hooch. You broke down scene by scene.
I did bring up Hooch and Ghost.
All right. So I'll blow through a couple more. Your pal, Dustin Pedroia. I resent this just as I do David Eckstein. I always have resented Eckstein. Now Pedroia wins an MVP.
Short, scrappy thing.
I don't like this. Listen. I watch NBA basketball. I played high school basketball. I was the 13th man at the end of the bench, but fine. I played high school ball. Anytime it gets into my head, I start to fantasize. I'd love to be in the NBA. Then I see LeBron James, and I say, oh, yeah, he's 6'8", chiseled physique at the age of 17. Yeah, he can leap over the arena if he wants to. Yeah, he belongs in playing professional sports, and then I don't. I understand that. Say, Albert Pujols is a mountain of a man.
I thought you were going to blow through these.
He hits 500-foot home runs. Careful, or you're going to cinch the deal with you being the creep of the week. But Pedroia, he's in the major leagues for only one reason, because he's scrappy, because he went the extra mile, he worked hard. That makes a jerk out of me and you too, Simmons. You're a normal-sized person. You should be ashamed of yourself, and I think it's terribly selfish on Pedroia's fault to expose all the rest of us for not working hard enough, or otherwise we could be in the big leagues.
I completely disagree with that one. But what's the next one?
The last one. And this one hurts too. Viggo Mortensen, he played.
Seen as Johnson.
Lord of the Rings. No, he shot. That was an offensive scene too. Eastern Promises. Yeah, the unnecessary.
Two, forgetting Sarah Marshall and then Eastern Promises. I had to see two danglers.
Yeah, well, and then he uses it as a weapon against the guys who are trying to kill him.
Flog the guy to death with it. Yeah.
Chokes one guy out with it, like a robot. Choking the anyway, but no, it's Viggo Mortensen because he has a movie
coming
out.
You know what? We just ruined the poker podcast. Was just about to talk about this. We screwed them over. They had a whole thing about Viggo Mortensen's Johnson. They were going to talk about.
Viggo is in a movie that's coming out called The Road. It was shot. It's a post-apocalyptic movie, and it's really awful. Supposedly, just a terrible scene. And it was shot in Pittsburgh, PA. And he says about it, does Viggo, after having rap shooting, it was a perfect place to shoot because you could really feel the bleakness. He called Pittsburgh bleak.
Oh, even I'm offended.
Now, this actor boy doesn't know these names, but let me tell you about bleak Pittsburgh. It produced Marino, Namath, Unitas, and how about this? He doesn't care about that. I'll speak his language for him. Gene Kelly, Sharon Stone. Michael Chabon, the great
Stone,
writer.
That's a nice one.
Yes, David McCullough, the great biographer.
Well, here's the good thing about Viggo. He's like 5'3". I don't know if you've ever been in the same room. I think he was at like the Essence.
He was Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. I've never felt so attacked. I love those movies. Listen, we made up the Zippo lighter and the Ferris wheel and the organ transplantation started in the city of Pittsburgh. And what's more, and most importantly, 100 million pounds of steel. Tons of steel.
All right. It's all noted.
World War II.
So Viggo's on watch.
We saved America. That steel went to making ships and tanks. So if you don't love Pittsburgh, you don't love freedom. That's the bottom line. Thank you.
Stay tuned for the Poker Podcast. About to record right now. Dave Damashek. Dave Damashek on demand on our Pod Center, 710am.com.
710espn.com.
710espn.com. You can find it in the local Pod Center and on PittsburghBlowhard.com. Always a pleasure. Happy doll. Happy holidays. Sorry, poker guys.
Same to you, creep. All right, bye.
Target the off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.